Welcome to Wisconsin Public Broadcasting's live coverage of the 2017 Biennial State Budget Address, live from the Wisconsin State Capitol in Madison. In a few moments, Governor Scott Walker will make his way into the Assembly Chambers. Walker will address the full legislature, his cabinet, and the people of Wisconsin. Good afternoon. I'm Frederica Freiberg from Wisconsin Public Television.
And I'm Sean Johnson from Wisconsin Public Radio. We're about to hear Governor Scott Walker's fourth state budget address. For the past couple weeks, Governor Walker has been previewing a few of the bigger items in this budget. And instead of big cuts, he is proposing to invest new money into areas like public education and the UW system. For example, Governor Walker has proposed an increase of $649 million for public education. The governor also announced $100 million in new money for the UW system, along with the tuition cut. And just last week, the governor called for an increase in the earned income tax credit, which helps low-income families.
Now, another big budget topic is transportation. Assembly Republicans and the governor have been going back and forth over whether an increase in the gas tax is warranted.
We got a preview of the governor's transportation budget last fall, and it called for delays in some projects, certainly, you know, a different flavor to the transportation budget compared to what he had introduced in the past. But you got the sense, I think, that it didn't exactly go where a number of legislators want him to go.
Well, in fact, they say that they're looking for a sustainable source of revenue, and they would potentially, all things are on the table, be looking at some kind of a tax increase, a gas tax increase. And the governor has been very strong and forthright in the idea that he does not want any kind of gas tax increase.
Yeah, and everything that he unveils today is the first step in the process, of course. It has to go through the legislature. He has bigger Republican majorities than he's ever had the pleasure of dealing with in the past. However, there's been some real contention there when it comes to the transportation budget in particular. And you've got the Assembly Speaker saying this morning that, they have to remember that the legislature is a co-equal branch of government, and they're not just going to, quote, salute when the governor delivers his budget. So you can see, a dispute playing out there over the next several months when it comes to transportation.
The governor is about to enter the Assembly Chambers, and people will receive him, no doubt, as you say, with these large majorities, with great applause. There it is.
You see the governor walking into the Assembly Chambers from the back of the chamber, escorted by state lawmakers. So we're shaking a lot of hands here. You also seen a reaction. The early reaction from Democrats has been kind of a mixture of, well, we support that, but when it comes to school funding or university funding, they're pointing out that, yes, these are good things. However, you have to remember this is a governor that in his first budget included a large cut to public schools, and in each of his previous three budgets cut the University of Wisconsin system budget. So it is a change for this governor. He attributes it to an improved budget climate and improved economy that has let him do this stuff. Democrats are saying, well, you know, clearly you're doing it because you're going to run next year for governor in 2018.
Right, and people, of course, have been saying that. A reporter at the budget briefing today called this a chicken-in-every-pot budget. It really does have, obviously, those increases in education. It also has some things that the Republican majority would like to see, some of the welfare reforms, as the governor calls them, having to do with work requirements for people who are on food share or food stamps or people who are on housing vouchers. So, but clearly the governor wants to highlight the increases that his budget makes in K-12 education as well as in the university system, and he is heavily highlighting the tax cuts that they have delineated in this budget. Sean, what was that number? $590 million, they say, in tax cuts?
And to get there, they're looping in a number of property tax cuts, too, that are maybe instigated by the state, but not direct state money. And a tuition cut goes into that figure. And we can't say that there is going to be a new income tax cut as part of this budget. So Kind of goes to that chicken and every pot theme that you were just mentioning there. It's not a retreat from the policies that he's proposed in his previous budgets. There's just the added spending on top of it.
Let's go now to Governor Scott Walker.
At this time, it is my honor to introduce the governor of the great state of Wisconsin, the Honorable Scott Walker.
Thank you. Thank you, Speaker Voss, Speaker Pro Tem August, President Roth, Majority Leader Fitzgerald, Minority Leader Schilling, I was going to say Barca first, but I'm going to Schilling, Minority Leader Barca, Supreme Court Justices, Constitutional Officers, members of the Cabinet, tribal leaders, members of the legislature, distinguished guests, and most importantly, my fellow citizens of the great state of Wisconsin, it's an honor to appear before you this afternoon to talk about our budget plan. Before we get started, I'd like to recognize the commander of the Wisconsin National Guard, Major General Donald Dunbar. Major Dunbar, I would like to thank you and the 10,000 strong members of the Wisconsin National Guard. A special thanks to those deployed, including members of the units from Madison and West Bend who departed since we last gathered together here for the State of the State Address. God be with you and with your families until you safely return home again. The state of our state is strong, and the state of our budget, well, it's outstanding. We are working and winning for Wisconsin. This budget includes historic investments in our priorities. We're putting more money into public education than ever before, making college even more affordable, caring for the truly needy, building a stronger infrastructure, rewarding work, and cutting taxes to the lowest point in decades. This is very good news. But first, let me tell you how all this is possible. Common sense reforms led to a strong economy, and wise fiscal management led us to a positive budget outlook. Specifically, lowering the burden on hardworking taxpayers helped put more money into the economy. Reducing excessive regulations and frivolous lawsuits helped improve the business climate so employers could add more jobs and offer higher wages. Just look at the results. During the past year, more people were employed in Wisconsin than ever before. Unemployment is now down to the lowest levels since January of 2001. And the percentage of people working in Wisconsin is among the best in the country. In other words, our economic reforms have been successful. We are working and winning for Wisconsin. In addition, we put in place reforms that help the government be better stewards of the taxpayers' money. We're able to reduce waste, fraud, and abuse in state government. You know, independent studies now show that our Act 10 reforms have saved schools, local and state government, some $5 billion. They note that the savings from those reforms more than cover the budgetary changes in the past. This year, the budget is projected to end with a higher-than-expected ending balance. Our rainy day fund is the largest in state history, 165 times bigger than we first took office. Our state pension system is one of only a few in the country that is fully funded. And our long-term outstanding debt is one of the lowest, meaning one of the best in the nation. In other words, our fiscal reforms have been successful. We are working and winning for Wisconsin. Overall, our common sense reforms brought us here to the point where we have a significantly better budget outlook. We call this the reform dividend. And wow, as the Fiscal Bureau pointed out, that's a lot of money. People tell us the reforms were necessary. Now they want us to move ahead. And we listen. This budget moves Wisconsin forward. Our priorities fall into three categories: student success, accountable government, and rewarding work. Our budget includes major new investments in each of these areas. To help improve student success, we're investing more money into education than ever before in the history of Wisconsin. We are putting $11.5 billion of state support into K through 12 education. Specifically, this budget includes a more than half a billion dollar increase in per pupil aid for public education. Just in case any of you missed that, let me repeat that. We are investing more money into public education than ever before. Last November, the State Department of Public Instruction requested an increase of $200 per student in the first year and a $204 increase per student in the second year in the budget. At the time, some suggested that we could not get close to that request. Well, this budget provides a $200 per pupil increase in the first year and a $204 increase per student in the second year. Ironically, I don't remember critics saying the budget request from the Department of Public Instruction wasn't enough last fall, which is probably why school leaders all across the state are saying such positive things about our budget proposal. And because our Act 10 reforms, these significant new dollars for education will overwhelmingly go into the classroom. In the past, our reforms allowed school districts to achieve substantial savings. Our budget, however, is not about the past. It's about looking forward to addressing the workforce needs of the future. In this budget, we use the reform dividend to invest more into public schools. We put more into rural schools with unique needs. We do more to improve schools in Milwaukee. We do more to expand programs that help students get early college credits. We do more to expand career and technical education. We do more to help recruit and retain excellent teachers. In addition to providing major new funding for our public schools, we do more to help charter and choice schools. You see, I want every child to succeed, and I trust parents to make the right decision for their children. Our reforms make it easier for schools to put these new funds into the classroom. On top of that, we continue funding for academic and career plans to help students start taking courses that count for graduation and whatever option they choose after school. One of those options is attending a technical college. This budget freezes tuition for technical college students. At the same time, we increase support for technical colleges and improve their performance system. You see, we need more people in manufacturing, agriculture, transportation, healthcare, information technology, and other key areas. Wisconsin's 16 technical colleges are helping us fill high-demand career areas. Another great option is the University of Wisconsin system. To help improve student success, the UW system will receive an increase of more than $100 million in this state budget. Now, working with the UW... Working with the UW Board of Regents, we're building a performance-based system for new funds. That will include criteria like the number of graduates, the length of time to graduate, how many graduates are employed, and how many are in high-demand areas within the state. We want student success to help fuel the growth of the Wisconsin economy. We also include a system to reward professors who spend more time teaching. This will reverse a nationwide trend where professor time in the undergraduate classroom is down while tuition has gone up. In fact, nationally, it's up about four times the rate of inflation since 1978. Wisconsin needs to be a leader in providing quality higher education that is indeed affordable. That's why our budget also includes the largest investment in history for need-based financial assistance for students at colleges and universities all across the state. And to make our public institutions even more affordable, I am proud to announce our budget reduces tuition for undergraduates from Wisconsin by 5% at all UW campuses. This helps students like Anastasia, Eric, and Bailey are here with us tonight, and many others like them across the state. During the decade before our freeze, tuition went up 118%. If that trend had continued, a typical UW student would be paying $6,300 more over the past 4 years. Thankfully, we froze tuition 4 years in a row, and that helped turn that trend around. But students, parents, and others are telling me that they are concerned about the high cost of higher education. Our reduction in tuition will save an average student $360 per year, and that's on top of the benefits of the freeze. To cover the reduction in tuition, we specifically put $35 million more into the UW system. To be clear, that's on top of the more than $100 million in new state funding we're putting into the UW system. Reducing tuition by putting more money into the UW is very much like lowering property taxes by putting more money into public schools in the state. This budget does both. Our budget also includes a bonus payment for public education that supports student success through accountable government. Following up on a promise made in the 2016 State of the State Address, we spent more than a year examining ways to improve how government provides health insurance to state employees. The Commission on Government Reform, Efficiency, and Performance reports that 46 states have some form of self-insured plan, and nearly half of those states are fully self-insured, including our neighbor, Minnesota. As you think about this reform, consider this. Across our state, employers, healthcare systems, schools, institutions of higher education, and others are successfully using self-insurance plans to make healthcare affordable for their employees and to make their dollars go further. We can do the same. Moving the state to a self-insured plan, we believe, will save Wisconsin taxpayers at least $60 million during this budget cycle. As promised, we put that money entirely into public education. Part of it will go to our K-12 public schools, and part of it will go to the UW system. We are working and winning for Wisconsin. Student success is a priority, which is why we reinvest the reform dividend into our schools, our technical colleges, and our University of Wisconsin system. We also use the reform dividend to help reduce the burden on the hardworking taxpayers. First, we will continue to lower property taxes. As promised, property taxes on a median-valued home will be lower in 2018 than they were in 2010. Think about that. As a percentage of personal income, they are now the lowest they've been since World War II. To drive them down even further, we're getting rid of the state portion of your property tax bill. For the first time since 1931, there will be no state tax collected on your property tax bill. Second, we fully implement the manufacturing and agriculture production tax credit. Over the past year, we ranked first in the Midwest for new manufacturing jobs. We want that trend to continue. Plus, we want to help our family farmers. Third, we will help working families with a sales tax holiday on school supplies and clothing. This will encourage people to shop at businesses that employ people right here in Wisconsin while helping working families with children in school. Fourth, we cut income taxes. As promised, income taxes in 2018 will be lower than they were in 2010. Overall, income taxes on a typical family will go down by more than $130 in this budget. So cumulatively, from 2010 to 2018, that's a savings of $1,542. Overall, the total new tax relief in our budget is $592 million. We are working and winning for Wisconsin. At a time when we have significant new revenues, we need to lower the overall burden on the hardworking people of Wisconsin. Reinvesting in you, the taxpayers, will ensure that our economy continues to grow. So let me be clear. Now is not the time to raise taxes. We should not raise taxes on farmers and manufacturers. We should not raise the income tax. We should not raise the gas tax. Instead, now that we have higher than expected revenues from the reform dividend, we need to use those dollars to fund our priorities. That's exactly what this budget does for the people of Wisconsin. Accountable government also means investing resources where they are needed. That's why we're expanding broadband internet services to every part of the state. It means helping family farmers improve their operations to limit runoff. And it is about improving staffing and facilities at our state veterans' homes. A solid transportation system is also part of being accountable to the taxpayers. Our budget includes more funding for local governments to fix roads and bridges and potholes than they've seen in more than a decade and a half. It also includes the largest amount ever for the rehabilitation of state highways. This budget gets all the active major projects outside of southeastern Wisconsin back on track. It adds funding for the work on Interstate 94 from the state line north through Kenosha and Racine counties. And it frees up resources to address the long-term transportation needs of the state, putting in place new reforms that will help lower the cost of building our infrastructure. We are working and winning for Wisconsin. Another part of making government more accountable to the taxpayers comes from rewarding work. We want everyone who wants a job to find a job and a career. For all who are able, we want to enable them to work. Wisconsin Works for Everyone builds off of the positive welfare reform started by my friend and yours, former Governor Tommy Thompson, under what was then called Wisconsin Works, or W-2. We want to ensure that people who are able to work actually enter the workforce. For starters, that means that able-bodied adults will need to be employed at least 80 hours a month to receive benefits like food stamps. If not, they'll need to be enrolled in our job training program. On top of that, we're working with the new administration and Congress to get approval to expand drug testing for people seeking public assistance. If they fail the test, we provide treatment to get them healthy and back into the workforce. You see, employers are eager to find individuals with fundamental employability skills who can pass a drug test. We want to get people back up on their feet again and into the workforce. But let me be clear. Wisconsin Works for Everyone goes beyond traditional welfare reform. We extend child care benefits so people don't hit a certain income level and then immediately drop off of any assistance. For many in the past, this becomes a deterrent to working more hours or taking a promotion. Our reforms will eliminate the so-called cliff. In addition to removing barriers to work, we know that strengthening strong two-parent families is another key to success. With this in mind, we expand the earned income tax credit to make it more attractive to work and to fix the marriage penalty. The Commission on the Future of the Family reminded us to focus early and often on the success sequence. It is simple. Graduate from school, get a job, and wait until you're 21 and married to have a child. Research shows that those who do so are overwhelmingly more likely to succeed. Another way to reduce poverty is to expand successful programs that we have in Kenosha and Brown counties that works with parents who owe child support so we can get them employed and back to paying their child support. This is good for the taxpayers, but most of all, it's good for the children. Wisconsin Works for Everyone also includes changes to make it easier for people with disabilities to enter the workforce without fear of quickly losing assistance. Similarly, we provide a new way to help young adults who age out of things like foster care so they can enter the workforce. We also propose expanding career and technical training in our correctional facilities to help transition offenders into the workforce. You see, a good job is one of the best ways to keep people from reentering the system. People want to work. It goes against our human nature to think that we should permanently be dependent on the government. Here in Wisconsin, we are good and decent people. We will help our fellow citizen when they are down and out. But public assistance should be a trampoline, not a hammock. Part of expanding our workforce also requires removing barriers to employment and to people starting their own small businesses. Our budget creates a panel to review occupational licenses to determine which are truly needed to protect public health and safety, and which of those licenses are just there as barriers to employment. Wisconsin Works for Everyone will help all of those who are able to enter the workforce and pursue a career that is right for them. It's just one more way that we are working and winning for Wisconsin. So think about it for a moment. More people were employed last year in Wisconsin than at any point in our history. We have one of the highest percentages of people working of any state in the nation. And our unemployment rate is the lowest it's been, well, since Tommy Thompson was governor. That's a long time ago. That's January of 2001. We are indeed working and winning for Wisconsin. With this budget, we are adding another $20 million to the Rainy Day Fund, making it 178 times larger. Sorry, that screws up your bingo card. 178 times larger than it was when we first took office. Our outstanding long-term debt is one of the lowest in the country. Our state has one of the only fully funded pension systems in the nation, and our budgets continue to end with surpluses. We are working and winning for Wisconsin. The common sense reforms that help build this healthy economy and strong management of our state resources created our positive budget outlook. That's the reform dividend. Now, we are investing the reform dividend into our priorities: student success, reduced college cost, care for the needy, maintenance of our roads and bridges, ways to reward work, and lower taxes. This is a solid budget built on a strong foundation. The reform dividend we created gives us plenty of ways to support our priorities. To all of you here and those watching at home, I ask for your support of this budget. Working together, let's keep moving Wisconsin forward. Indeed, we are working and winning for Wisconsin. Thank you all. May God bless each and every one of you. May God bless our men and women in uniform. May God bless the state of Wisconsin, and may God continue to bless the United States of America. Thank you.
And so Governor Scott Walker concludes his fourth biennial budget address, talking about how he's going to put more money into education, K-12, and the university system. There will be a lot to discuss and analyze in the weeks ahead.
And you heard him reference something there, too, which we haven't talked a lot about before in budget terms, and that's a part of the way of how he's going to pay for it. There was a decision earlier today by the Group Insurance Board, which the governor is projecting is going to free up $60 million in this budget to pay for K-12 spending and university spending. But that's not exactly a given.
Because it should be noted that the consultants report on that ahead of this vote by the Group Insurance Board today, and ahead of this being inserted into the budget as a method to fund some of these priorities of the governor's, the consultants said that this self-insurance in the state of Wisconsin could either cost $100 million or save $42. So we are joined now by the president of the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance, Todd Berry. Todd, thanks for being here. In terms of this self-insurance for the state of Wisconsin, what do you, before we get to your overall expression of this budget, what do you make of the use of that?
I don't have anything against the notion of self-insurance. In fact, when I served on a school board now many, many years ago, we were self-insured and saved quite a bit of money. And it can work. But the devil is in the details, because healthcare markets and labor markets vary from part of the state to part of the state. And I think that may be one of the reasons why the analysts aren't sure whether it generates savings or not. It's one small part of this budget that is sort of based on assumptions. Assumption that we can generate savings from self-insurance. And of course, there's other assumptions too.
So let's step back from that for a minute and take the 40,000-foot view. What's your impression of this budget?
Well, I've been at this job a while, and I did a study a few years back that looked at past governors and their budgets. And it was interesting that there was a pretty strong statistical correlation between the year before an election or 2 years before an election and the amount of the spending increase. And it didn't matter whether it was Jim Doyle or Tommy Thompson or going back further. There was always this pre-election bounce. And this is that budget, and spending is going to go up 8 to 9%.
And so, I mean, the big question that I think we had going into this speech, into today, was how is he going to pay for it? and we know more now, but I'm not sure I could give a concise answer to that. Yeah. How is he going to pay for it?
Well, the biggest part of it, I think we know now, is that we had a $453 million surplus estimated at the end of this year. Now, how real that was, people can debate, but he's ending the budget with an $83 million balance. To give you some idea, that's about a day or two of state spending. It's less than a half a percent of what the state spends. So it's a small balance, one of the smallest percentage-wise that we've seen in quite a while. So when you generate $350 million by spending down surplus, that really helps you. Some savings from the group insurance, perhaps. And then there's the economy is doing okay, so Medicaid caseload comes down. So to the degree they overestimated their Medicaid costs, they save money there. And the tax collections, to be honest, aren't setting the world on fire. But to have growth of 3 or 3.5% is better than we were seeing earlier in the year. And although it's actually less than the median over the last, say, 5 or 10 years. So it's a little bit of extra revenue from taxes and then buying down surplus. And
so these are some of the assumptions of which you were speaking.
And so many of them are really a function of the economy, the tax collections, the Medicaid caseload. And I don't really know how to think about this economy, truly. The Federal Reserve Bank had been lowering its estimates for every quarter for a couple of years. They seem to have flattened out now. It isn't going to take much to lose that little extra revenue we need to balance things.
I wanted to take a look at the transportation issue of which we spoke before the governor's speech. And at one point when the governor in this address was talking about transportation funding, he said our budget includes more funding for local governments. I think you guys noticed this as well. It was at that moment behind the governor's podium, Speaker Robin Voss. We saw him roll his eyes and shake his head at that. So, Sean, what does that speak to?
Well, I mean, I can tell you from this morning, having covered Speaker Voss at a meeting of the Wisconsin Counties Association, he essentially said that the governor's proposal to spend more on local roads but cut back on state projects was, he equated it to bribery and said it wasn't serious and said it wasn't going to happen. So to hear those words, to see the speaker behind the governor like that, as you mentioned, it doesn't seem like a typical budget cycle, and maybe not what people expected with the largest Republican majorities in decades and a Republican governor.
Well, you know, if you go back into Wisconsin history, when you have one-party government, as we did with the Democrats for several decades, and now with Republicans, the majorities get big, then the divisions start to appear because you're building a majority in very diverse parts of the state, and I think you could see here the possibility that there would be Republicans who were a little more on the tight side fiscally, who think this budget, perhaps, you know, $1.3 billion in new spending might be a little much. Over 4% a year new spending might be a little much. And of course, there already is the spat between the governor and some Republican leaders about transportation. So I think these kinds of different opinions are natural when you get large majorities.
Now, of course, the governor is also making a lot of $592 million in tax cuts and fees. What's your response to that?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things in there that I think are good. The way they did the income tax cuts, I think you can give him credit for. I'm not too happy with the idea about sales tax holidays because the research is just very, very clear that they don't work and they don't save people any money. There's also a levy credit on the tax bill, which taxpayers will welcome, but it does involve an accounting trick, pushing money across the fiscal year. So, you know, there's things you can...
Devil's in the details.
Yeah, the devil's in the detail. But the biggest income tax, the income tax cut, is fairly straightforward, makes a lot of sense. The earned income tax credit increase sort of rolls the clock back to a prior budget when he had reduced that. And the way they're restructuring it makes a lot of sense. I have to say, the other thing is, if the total tax cuts being about $300 million a year is about what the Republican leadership in the legislature says they would like to increase transportation revenues by, and the governor says he doesn't want to allow them to do that unless he gets an offsetting tax cut. Well,
there it is.
The structure is there for some kind of deal.
All right.
We'll watch that. Todd Barry, thanks.
Todd Barry, president of the Wisconsin Taxpayer Alliance, was our guest tonight. If you'd like to see tonight's speech along with Todd Barry's insights, you can watch it again by going to WPT.org. Wisconsin Public Television will have it posted later this evening.
We'll also have continuing coverage in reaction to Governor Walker's state budget address this Friday night at 7:30 on Here and Now.
Wisconsin Public Radio will also continue to follow developments from the Capitol. You can hear more discussion on the air and online at WPR.org.
The next couple of months will be filled with debate over the budget and spring elections for state school superintendent. For more insights and analysis, go to wisconsinvote.org, where you can always get our continuing team coverage of Wisconsin politics online.
I'm Sean Johnson with Wisconsin Public Radio.
And I'm Frederica Freiber with Wisconsin Public Television. Thanks for joining us. This concludes Wisconsin Public Broadcasting's coverage of the 2017 Biennial Budget Address.
And as we just heard, Governor Scott Walker delivering his 2017 to 2019 biennial budget address about 30 minutes to the legislature. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. For some analysis now on what the governor had to say, we turn to Charlie Jacobs, Associate Professor of Political Science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Charlie, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
We heard about some of the nuts and bolts about the money there. Politically, what was your takeaway from what we heard from the governor?
I think it's relatively obvious that the governor was setting up for himself a platform on which he can launch a reelection campaign. I don't think there's much mystery here. You saw a repetition of the same theme that he used in his State of the State. Wisconsin is working and winning, and it's got the ring of a campaign theme behind it. And that repetition, I think, is maybe a cue for us. And the other thing is that the issues that he really punctuated today are what you might call sort of kitchen table kinds of issues, the ones that moms and dads and couples sit around and fret about when they're looking at their monthly bills and their monthly income. And so he really hit on those. I mean, he touched on some other issues as well, but they all seem to revolve around how that checkbook is going to be allocated by individual families. So to me, it seemed like a well-drafted budget address that really hit on the issues that are facing Wisconsin, but one that certainly is preparatory for a reelection run.
And with education, a big ticket item for him, pitching more than $100 million in state funding for the UW system, also a big boost to K-12 education funding. What is that saying about his budget?
Well, I think it was kind of interesting, the language that he used. I don't have the direct quote, but to paraphrase, it was something like, "We're looking forward, not looking backwards." It's almost as though he's kind of telling us, like the Wizard of Oz, you know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain and what I did in the previous years. Because, I mean, if you look at some of the data about what is unfolded with education spending, I mean, you have to remember for a significant number of years, the drop in funding for education, K through 12 in this state, was among the worst in the country. I mean, the cuts to the programs. And so in essence, he's reversing that trend, which is going to be very helpful for schools. But I think there's some question about how the allocation is going to be met. There's some question about whether or not poorer districts and rural districts are going to get the same bang for the buck that some of the other districts, the wealthier districts, are going to get. So, I mean, I think it's important that people will be pleased to see these increases in their districts, especially if they're also seeing a reduction in their property taxes. But I think this is sort of a re-energizing the K-12 system after there were all of these massive changes from Act 10 and after.
Is this going to be a point of political dispute? The governor and his supporters saying, look, an increase in funding, Democrats and other critics saying, yeah, but you haven't caught up with, I don't know if this if it adds up, but, you know, this is just balancing out what you had cut in the past. Are we going to hear a lot of this over the next, 2 years?
I think that's the sort of the simple debate that's going to happen, but I think that when you get to the policy details, they're really going to be looking at the education funding formula and how it's going to work. I think that's what's really going to drive some of the distinctions between the Democrats and the Republicans here. And you may even win some Republicans on this, especially those who are from districts that are facing some socioeconomic difficulties or some of the rural districts. That, I think, is going to be a significant debate in the Assembly and in the Senate. The problem with that is, you know, even for people like me, you kind of get lost in the weeds when it comes to talking about some of these formulas. And so I'm not sure it's going to resonate well for Democrats who might push back against this budget with the voting public. They're just going to hear that there are going to be increases to their local schools. And that often is enough to please them with a budget like this.
We're talking with Charlie Jacobs, an associate professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere, talking about Governor Walker's budget address. And, you know, something getting a little bit that hasn't had a lot of talk, Charlie, he mentioned expanding broadband internet services to every part of the state. Kind of left it right there, but, you know, what do you think about throwing that into the mix in the budget?
Well, I think that that can be a large driver for business, for industry. It can help educational institutions and systems. So it has sort of multiple touches and can be very beneficial. And, I mean, you need these kinds of technological advances to ensure that you're attracting businesses to the state. And we're not just talking about, you know, the sort of typical the typical kinds of businesses that he's always lauding, the large manufacturers or helping promote the local farmer. I mean, you need startups, you need entrepreneurs, and there have been some reports that have come out lately that suggest that Wisconsin is lagging pretty badly nationwide for attracting startups. So having a large expansive broadband network in the state is going to help attract those kinds of small businesses that can really react to the growing and new economy. So I think that that's something that's a real plus and a real positive for education, for schools, and for business and industry.
Want to invite our listeners to join in at 800-642-1234. What is your reaction to what you heard from the governor on the budget? What do you think the priorities should be now as the legislature starts to look closely at this budget plan, starts to amend it, change it as part of the process? What are your priorities? Where do you think money should be invested, taxes raised or cut, programs expanded or dialed back? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Transportation, Charlie, we were hearing that's going to be a big point of debate. It was a big issue last time around in the budget. The governor's saying more money going to the local governments. But what about those other highway projects? What do you see playing out with that?
I have a feeling the governor is going to really dig in his heels on this because, I mean, there's nothing more evident than a fee increase when you go to re-up your license or you see your gasoline prices ratcheted up 3 or 5 cents because you're adding to the gas tax. I mean, again, those are those sort of kitchen table kinds of issues, and sometimes ones you don't really budget for and can be a surprise for individuals. So if this truly is, you know, his preparation for a run for another term, he's going to want to try to avoid those. But I think what the Assembly and what the Senate are thinking about are sort of the long-term efforts. I mean, they're in a hole. I think the estimate is about $1 billion shortfall in the transportation fund. And that's not peanuts. I mean, you've really got to make up that money someplace. And the longer you wait, the more expensive the borrowing can become or the more difficult it is to try to go back and rebuild your infrastructure. So, I mean, on the one hand, we're just talking about broadband, which is an infrastructure issue, and he's willing to sink some money in there. But he seems to be taking a shorter-term vision of what to do with our transportation system in the state. And again, that also kind of flies in the face of his pursuit of growing business and industry. I mean, business and industry wants to see a well-developed infrastructure where they can move product easily and move people easily. So it's interesting to see that he's taking that tack, and maybe it's one he's willing to bend to eventually and as a trade-off for something else that he might want in the budget.
Let's take a call now with Bart from La Crosse. Hi, Bart.
Hi.
What did you think of the budget address?
Oh, I think it was pretty generic, and devil's in the detail, of course. My question refers to the self-insured proposal. I'm a state employee, and so I think there is a lot of state employees that don't understand the fundamentals of that proposal, and maybe if your guests could compare and contrast of what that might mean to state employees. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Charlie?
Well, I wish I could proclaim myself an expert on self-insurance, but that was a little bit out of my depth. I mean, the biggest thing, I think, is that there's some risk for employers when you're self-insuring, and that creates a little bit of trepidation. So, I mean, a fully funded plan, a fully insured plan, creates a significantly larger ease for the person who's insured, because they know it's always there on the back end. Self-insured plans don't typically do that because you're paying up front for everything. So the little I know about it, I do know that, you know, employers sometimes balk because they have to front a lot of the risk, and that's not something they often want to do.
Charlie, you keep referring back to, he touched on kitchen table issues. He's really nourishing these kitchen table issues. How do you think Democrats will respond to this budget plan?
You know, in many ways, I think the governor has been very strategic, and he's kind of painted them into a corner. I mean, when you come out and you're actually going to propose a larger increase than the state superintendent wants to offer.
Mm-hmm.
What do the Democrats say? After beating up the governor for years as being sort of the anti-education governor, it's really hard to pivot and then try to blame him for giving you more money than you wanted in the first place. So I think the governor has been pretty strategic in that way. They might be able to come at him for some of the issues related to welfare to work, but I think he can complement that by saying, well, we're also going to extend benefits, and we're going to make sure that the working poor have opportunities to keep their benefits even while they're earning larger incomes. So even though he might be asking more of people who have been using social benefits, he's also going to provide more of them. So he seems to have a yin for every yang when it comes to the Democratic criticisms of his proposals. So again, I think a strategic approach, and one that's going to play well for him if he does decide to run again.
Bart, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Charlie Jacobs from St. Norbert College about Governor Walker's budget address delivered just earlier this hour. Back to our callers now. Again, the number is 800-642-1234 with your response, your thoughts on the budget. We've got John on the line in Fond du Lac. John, hi.
Hello there. Yeah, I was calling in 2011. Walker turned down the federal money for broadband for rural areas and places in the state. We're dead last in broadband now, so that's a good start there. And the roads, he said in 2011, roads were the number one priority to move agricultural and tourism and transportation, and we have the worst roads. So that's just two right there that I just don't know what he's talking about. So just want to leave it at that. I'm driving, so
gotcha. John, thanks for the call. Charlie, those infrastructure issues there again, John, interested in them, obviously. And is this something, even though there's some funding increases for broadband coming, rural broadband, it sounds like, roads, kind of hard to tell what the net impact is there. Is this a point of political controversy, maybe something Democrats will be looking at?
Well, I mean, I think the Democrats, as they often have sort of bludgeoned the governor for turning down federal dollars. But Walker's argument has always been that he wants to make sure that he has control of the policy. And when you take dollars from the federal government, they come with strings. Sometimes if it's a block grant, there are fewer strings. And if it's more of a categorical grant, you're going to have, you know, greater input by the federal government. So in turning it down when he did, his position likely was that, you know, if we're going to do it in Wisconsin, we're going to do it the way Wisconsin should do it and not at the behest of the federal government. He did the same thing with some of the train infrastructure and rail infrastructure money that they turned down. I mean, one of the things about the roads and offering it to local communities is you don't have a strategic statewide integrated program. Instead, you're relying on local governance to make decisions about where to put the dollars for the roads, and it might not be the best expenditure of those dollars. If it's more coordinated from the state, where you're using the dollars to affect the best strategy possible to move people and goods, you might get a little bit better use of the dollars you spend.
John, thanks so much for your call. Let's take Eric now from Madison. Hi, Eric.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
You can't expect anything less. The election's coming up. He's going to throw money at education. He's going to throw money where he's so badly slapped us in the face to try to get a vote on the short-term things. It seems like the American people sure have a short memory. They forgot about when George Bush left office and where we are today and quite frankly, where we are in the state as a whole. It's a nice little move by him, but I don't believe anything he says or does. Thanks.
Charlie, ensconced in politics, this budget?
Yes. But really, I mean, budgets always are political vehicles because they're setting policy priorities. And so when you've got majorities in the state house and you have a Republican governor like you do, I mean, they're setting policy priorities. This is maybe a little more transparent because the election is coming up. I think for the governor, though, he's playing some risky cards here in one respect, because we don't know which direction this economy is going based upon the policies that are going to be developed by Republicans at the national level and the direction that President Trump takes us. So, you know, this year he was lucky to hear about some very favorable revenue news that really contributed to a rosy forecast for the budget. But, you know, that can turn on a dime. And just like the Medicaid savings helped this year, increases in Medicaid output can really hurt a budget. And so he can promise a lot, and the budget can be set to expend a lot of dollars. But, you know, forecasting budgets is difficult, and forecasting economies is difficult. So there could be some surprises for him that actually undermine his ability at reelection.
And, Charlie, a couple of people have mentioned that the devil is in the details. Of course, the governor can't go line by line in their budget, in their address. That would take, I don't know, a few days probably to do that. But what are you going to be watching for as that full document gets released to try to flesh out our understanding of what we heard today?
I think what I want to see is exactly how we're matching some of the expenditures with the tax cuts that he's proposing at the same time. I mean, these are not insignificant kinds of programs that he's proposing, in particular the tuition savings at the UW campuses. While, again, that it's going to be a welcome infusion of cash that he's proposed, at the same time you're losing lots of revenue. And one of the interesting things is he's promoting something that's very favorable for students, getting them out in a reasonable amount of time and then getting them into the workforce, you're also losing student dollars for tuition if they're graduating even earlier, which is a cost to the university system. Of course, you're going to generate some tax revenue from the income that they're hopefully generating as employed individuals. But those kinds of details is what I'd be interested in seeing, and how the sheets all balance out at the end, because he's proposing very large tax cuts, and he's also proposing some very large expenditures. So seeing exactly how that works out is going to be interesting.
Let's take another call now. Kurt from Elkhorn. Hi, Kurt.
How you doing?
Yeah, good. What would you like to add about the budget?
Well, you know, I like the idea of drug testing people on public assistance. That certainly cleans some things up. But let's level the playing field. Let's say anybody getting public money, that means the governor, that means the senators, that means the House of Representatives. Let's give all them drug tests, too. And, you know, if they don't pass, they get put on probation. Otherwise, they get fired.
So welfare reform and some of the approaches to giving out this type of money. Charlie, what about this Wisconsin Works for Everyone initiative?
Well, a couple of things to keep in mind. When you're changing some of these programs that are based in part upon federal programs and federal dollars, you often have to seek waivers from the federal government. That will likely be easier under a Republican administration. The drug testing issue that Kurt raises, has not been tested at the United States Supreme Court level, but there have been some courts who have engaged arguments regarding whether or not it's constitutional, because it may be an unreasonable search under the Fourth Amendment. So it may be unreasonable for individuals who are getting welfare, and it may certainly also be unreasonable for public officials and others who might be getting benefits from the state. So that one we're going to have to wait a little bit to see exactly what happens.
And, you know, we often watch these budgets. When it's split government, divided government, it goes late into the summer. Do you think we'll have a faster timeline to get this one done, or are things like transportation going to hang us up?
I think there's going to be some hang-ups. Again, I still think, because to use the overused phrase of the day, the devil's in the details, I think that people really have to dig into this budget. I think that the UW system's going to have a voice in exactly what's being proposed and how that's going to... I mean, it's a big budget, and there are lots of actors involved there, so I think we're going to have to wait on that. Transportation, I think, is likely the big one, because that's kind of the sword of Damocles that's hanging over the budget. So, yeah, we're going to probably see a long one on this one.
Charlie, I'm sure we'll talk to you again about this. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, guys.
That's Charlie Jacobs, Associate Professor of Political Science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Tune in tomorrow morning after 6 on the Joy Cardine Show. Reaction from both sides of the aisle to this budget. Then after 3, we'll key in on some of the education budget outlays the governor was talking about here on Central Time.
Coming up next, it's the news from NPR and WPR, and then we find out what it means now that the Army has given a green light for completing the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.